B-Pod Studios.
The line with us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast, our good friend Adam Schefter. What's up, Schefty? Good morning.
Gentlemen, what's going on today?
Just hanging out at work right now. Have you ever, in all your years of covering sports, have you ever had a feud with a subject, a player, a coach, anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, feud.
Feud is a little overdramatic, but, you know, whatever.
It implies that it's a long-running feud. I've had instances, more so when I was younger, a lot more when I was younger, where somebody got worked up, heated, angry, whatever it may be. I mean, I think every sports reporter has encountered that at some point in his career. If they haven't, they probably haven't done their job the right way. but I've had, I could remember Jim Fossil one time when he was the Broncos offensive coordinator, just going crazy on me. You know, the first time I was ever exposed to it, it was unbelievable. I was a 23, 24-year-old, young, eager, ambitious sports reporter who had arrived in Denver. It was 1991. I had arrived in Denver a year ago. And NBC sent Gail Gardner, a reporter, out to do a story on why Dan Reeves might not be back in Denver the next year. And Dan had coached there a long time, very successful, had been a great coach, a Hall of Fame-level coach. And nobody would talk about it on the record. Nobody. Except the young, eager, ambitious reporter who had arrived in Denver a year before. And so they put me on camera, and somehow they said, well, she kept asking the same question over and over and over. Why wouldn't he be back? What's wrong with him? What's the problem with him? Why don't people like him? And they strung together five adjectives on that Sunday morning pregame show on NBC, in which I described Dan Reeves as tyrannical, condescending, humorless. it was five things, you know. And so on Monday morning, I got summoned to his office. I had to explain to him why he was each of those five things to his face. I've never been more unnerved and unsettled as a professional in my life. And I remember the great Jim Sacamano, longtime PR director for the Broncos, who had to go around to everyone in the building who was all upset at me, saying, guys, let me just explain to you this way. We got this puppy on our hands. We got this puppy here at this Broncos complex. And the puppy one day is going to grow up and be a big dog, but right now he made a mess everywhere. Peed all over the carpet. We got to clean it up.
That's great. Adam Schefter joining us here on the Comcast Business Hotline. Schefter, we all saw your tweet the other day talking about DeSean Jackson expected to play against the Giants. What's the latest on DeSean Jackson?
I haven't heard any different. I was told Sunday that he would be back on Thursday night. So now look, could he have a setback during the week? Yeah, that could happen. But I was told he'd be back on Thursday night, plain and simple. And so that's my expectation. I'd be surprised if it didn't happen. But, you know, it was funny because on Sunday I had someone from the Buccaneers tell me, yeah, Leonard Fournette's going to be active. He's not going to play much, but he'll be active. And then an hour before the game, somebody texted me, hey, that was the plan, and we just decided to change up at the last moment. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is, you know, what you run into sometimes when you're reporting these things. You go by what people tell you, right?
Sure.
And so I was told he would be out there. I'm expecting to be out there. We'll see if there's any setbacks.
All right. Adam Schefter joining us here on the Comcast Business Hotline. Adam Schefter, obviously NFL insider for ESPN. Schefter, the other guy we're worried about is Lane Johnson. Have you heard any status update on Lane?
You know, a short week makes it tough, right? It's just, and it seems like it's going to be one of those things that he's going to be battling all year long. And that's going to make life tough for him and tough for that offensive line. They are just so depleted everywhere. I mean, it's just such a tough thing at this point in time. Lane Johnson, ankle injury, limited in practice so far this week. I mean, what other way are they going to list him? You're just going to say limited, right?
Right.
At least they're not ready to rule him out. I guess that's the one encouraging, hopeful sign that you could take out of that.
Schefter, I was saying earlier, I'm watching the Kansas City game the other night, and they have an offensive line that's depleted by injury. Schwartz goes out in the middle of the game, but they, you know, they had made a signing. They plugged somebody in, a veteran. Isn't there anybody? I mean, the Eagles are throwing out Brett Toth, who has only played against the run in a college career. And, you know, the people that they're throwing out there, is there anybody on the scrap heap that they should have taken a look at? Because it looks to be a little too late now.
Well, let me say this. Offensive line is one of those positions that every team in the league is always looking to upgrade. There are never enough offensive linemen. Never. And Brett Toth is a guy that when he was coming out, was it West Point?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They loved him coming out. And I think, was he supposed to come there and then couldn't? Or they had to put him on a list, and Arizona claimed him on waivers. And I remember the Eagles organization being upset about that. And they liked this guy all along. And so I've always thought that this is a guy that Philadelphia was mentally invested in. And then for some reason, Arizona put him on waivers, and I was not surprised that Philly claimed him back because Philly always liked the guy. So, you know, even though, yeah, it's not what you envisioned at the offense, well, I think he can play. And so they're just juggling things like crazy right now. Kelsey's the only guy in place that's left. Is that correct?
Kelsey's the only one in place, and Nate Herbig is another guy that started the season, but Kelsey's the only regular. Yeah.
And by the way, I think that's the case with a few different teams around the league. Like the Denver Broncos have suffered a bunch of offensive line injuries, opt outs. The New England Patriots have gone through that, I think, to a certain extent. A lot of teams, and when you say, you know, is there anybody out there that they should look at? I think if there's one position that teams are looking for more than any other, it's offensive line. So I don't believe there's much, if any, depth out
there. Okay.
All right. Corey Glenn was a guy that was in Philadelphia for a workout when we were still having problems with Jason Peters, trying to figure out what was going to happen there. Any update on Corey Glenn? I don't think he signed anywhere.
He's a guy, like, I'm just telling you, very talented, upside. Buffalo was anxious to move on from him.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati didn't care to keep him. And I'll just say this. If there's an offensive lineman on the street right now, there's a reason for it. I mean, I don't know the backstory behind Cordy Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just telling you, there are no magic solutions. You're looking for a magic solution to the offensive line, and it just doesn't exist. What you need to do is you need to draft and develop and sign some guys of practice squads and keep developing them, and you can't have enough of those guys. I always laugh. I'm talking to teams around the trade deadline, around the final cut, and I'm like, what position are you looking for? Offensive line, guard, center, tack. I'm like, why don't teams draft more of them in the middle rounds? I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting. And the lack of the offseason program didn't help the development. You know, there wasn't extra time to work with these guys in person, and there's no XFL or AFL, I don't think. I don't even know where we're at on most leagues, right? But so even when there was NFL Europe, there were a lot of offensive linemen that were developed over there back then, and that doesn't happen anymore. So it's hard to develop these guys, very hard. And now they're coming out of colleges, these spread offenses. It's just a different deal.
Yeah, speaking with Adam Schefter, obviously the Eagles played Sunday. Carson Wentz was hit 16 times against the Ravens, and now, hey, get right back out there on Thursday. We're trying to come up ways behind a piecemeal offensive line, behind a running back that is not your starter with Miles Sanders being out as well. We're trying to come up with ways to protect Carson Wentz, and we're talking about maybe even more Jalen Hurts. But what's your experience, and what do you know when it comes to short turnaround with the Thursday night games after teams get banged up in the previous week? What jumps to mind about that short turnaround?
I think you're looking at it in the glass half empty way.
That's correct.
And I'd like to look at it the glass half full way.
Okay.
Right? If you can squeak through on a Sunday, then we get 10 days to rest up and get guys ready. And every team in the league plays on a Thursday night, and nobody enjoys doing it. And everybody gets through it. And the most successful teams find a way to just get it done that week, persevere, find a way to escape with a win, and then go enjoy a bye weekend with a victory and have extra time to rest up for the next game. I mean, that's the way I'm sure the Eagles are thinking about it. That they, by the way, I mean, I know you've covered this, I'm sure, but the Cowboys to watch them the other night, I mean, okay. And Washington is struggling. And the Giants are a try-hard team. They you know, they give you everything, but they're not a particularly good team right now.
Mm.
Like, who's going to win this division?
Yeah.
Like, it's just they are doing their best to gift wrap this for Philadelphia. They're doing their best. They're trying to say, We want you to win it. It's here for you. Just take it. Just take the division.
You're right, and I want to have that attitude, but at 1-4-1, I can't have that attitude just yet. But what is a nice little warm, fuzzy feeling inside is when you mention those Dallas Cowboys, and I see shots of a Cowboys fan, a girl kissing her boyfriend to console him. That was great. But then I also look at the stuff that comes out of the locker room afterwards and how there seems to be some turmoil already there with their new head coach.
Well, by the way, you talk about offensive lines. That team has been decimated at the offensive line, right? Like, no Travis Frederick, no Lael Collins, no Tyron Smith, lose Zach Martin the other night. Like, that's the strength of that team. Those guys, right? And they're gone, all of them. Mm-hmm. All of them. So, what do you want them to do? Like, don't you think if there was a good enough offensive lineman, they'd sign him to try to fill in for these guys?
Yeah, I'd like them to just forfeit against the Eagles and just give them the win. But in terms of the stuff going on behind, they were bad
the other night. They were like New York Jets bad.
It was
unbelievable.
That's terrible. But what have you heard about anything coming out of that locker room where it seems like people are already upset and turmoil is happening?
You know, here's what I think of that. I'm aware of these anonymous quotes that were issued, about the coaches not doing their jobs. Well, guess what? The players aren't doing their jobs either. I'm not anonymous on this. I'm telling you right now, they look terrible out there. The players, the coaches, everybody. And on any team that's 2-4, I guarantee there are people in the Eagles locker room who don't think the coaching staff is doing a good job. And I guarantee there are people on the coaching staff who don't think the players are doing a good job. That's what happens in a loser's locker room. It's totally normal. You just don't hear it all that often. So when those losses mount, the complaints mount, and what was the expression that Bill Parcells used at the Hall of Fame? It was a great one. It's really good. That applies to the Dallas Cowboys season right now. If you just Google it right now, Bob, can you Google Bill Parcells' quote about losers at the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I'm telling you, it's really good.
And Jamie's on top of it. So, Shefty, while he's looking that up, I'll go. Yeah. Let me go to another area. Since they are playing the Giants on Thursday night, can you give us a little synopsis of them? We know the record. We know how bad. But a little insight as to where they are going into Thursday night's game?
Yeah, another team that's lost a lot of players to injury. They shuffled offensive personnel in and out. They've lost offensive linemen. Their left tackle that they drafted in the first round last week was late for a meeting, didn't start the game. Daniel Jones has turned over the football quite a lot. But, again, that team, they go out there, they give you effort. Like, you'll see a team that tries hard. There was only one game that they were blown out of this year. It was against the 49ers, I believe. Other than that, they've been in games. They don't strike you as a overly talented team. They've got holes. They're missing Barkley. But they try hard. They try hard. Did Jamie find the quote?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Go ahead.
It was about the first ever black player inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he had a quote on the back of a building, in the back of the building that said, his name was Emlyn Tunnell, who was inducted in the class of 1967, and the inscription said, "Losers assemble in little groups and complain about the coaches and players in other little groups, but winners assemble as a team."
There you go.
That's awesome.
I prefer Sean Connery in The Rock. Losers go home. Losers complain about their best while winners go home and have relations with the prom queen.
But that is true. Yeah. Right? Losers assemble in little groups, complain about the coaches, and winners assemble as a team.
I love that. I absolutely love it. Shefty, two quick things for you. One, any update on Alshon Jeffrey? Have you heard about whether or not he's going to play Thursday or maybe next week?
Have not heard there. Okay. Deshaun, I was told, was playing. I didn't hear that. I would imagine if Jeffrey was playing, I would have probably been told that too, right?
Right.
So I'm going to guess he's not going to play, but I don't know that.
Okay, and then also there was a report that came out about the Eagles with the intention to be buyers at the deadline. Yeah. Have you heard anything to that effect as well?
I never like to refute another report. Try to respect old people, but I don't believe that to be true. I believe they'd be more sellers than buyers.
You believe the Eagles would be more sellers at the deadline than they would be for buyers?
Yeah. Now, look, if there's an opportunity to acquire a player at a good price, they're always going to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you're asking me today, do I think that they'd be more apt to trade a decent pick for a player or trade a decent player for a decent pick? I'd say they'd be more apt to trade a player for a decent pick than they are the other way around. And it's very simple. I think they're projected to be about $64 million over the cap next year.
Mm-hmm.
don't have a lot of wiggle room and flexibility to go bring in added contracts. Money has been a complaint amongst a lot of teams in the league. Like, everyone's like, hey, we don't want to do the money thing right now. Now, the one thing that could potentially alter that would be if they win Thursday night. When they play next week after the
Cowboys.
Okay, so if they rip off two wins, could something happen before the deadline where they make a move to bring in somebody? If the price is right, sure. I still think, all factors considered, right now, they are more apt to trade a player than they are to trade for a player today. And we'll see whether that changes based on the next two games.
And I got to know this as well, because it's actually an assignment our boss gave us. So I want to ask for your advice. We're asking callers today. And Shefty, I'll ask you, what is your go-to vending machine snack? We've been asked to restock our vending machine with some new items. So I'm asking, if we were to do one for Shefty, what would it be?
Well, when you say vending machines, here's the first thing I think of. I think in ESPN, they have all these concessions around the campus. And there are vending machines and little snacks. And you know, you go there and you pick out what you want and you give them your credit card and you put it there and everything's good. Well, my boss, Seth Markman, a few years back got a call from security at ESPN. He said, hey, Mr. Markman, very sorry to have to call you, but we've got one of your employees who we have video of for the last 8 months has been coming in to the concession area, taking stuff out of the vending machines, taking snacks off the tables, and not paying. Guy's just basically walking and stealing everything. Guy who's on air. And Seth's like, who is it? And they said, Bill Polian.
Oh, Bill!
So Seth Markman calls Bill Polian into the office. He said, Bill, well, what's the deal? He goes, oh, you have to pay for them? You know, with the Colts.
Yes!
Where you can just go take snacks around the building, get no idea, so... Now the name of Seth Markman's fancy football team is Polian's Dine and Dash.
That's great. Shefty, always great. Oh, but what's your snack? What's your go-to?
It's going to be a healthy thing, I can tell. Go ahead, Shefty. Drop it on us.
It better not be a fig bar.
It is. It's going to be trail mix or a fig bar. Go ahead, Shefty.
Fig bar.
Yes.
It's not a fig bar.
Shefty's with me. Woo.
It would be a power bar. It would be that. Okay. Yeah,
not the same bar. Family.
Yeah, same family. Cousin. A cousin of the fig bar.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Shefty, thanks so much, brother. Always great catching up with you.
Thanks, Shefty.
Well, stay safe.
You too, buddy.
You as well. The great Adam Shefty.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.